Spring is here, and you can now get almost anything you need for your sunny days delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? Well, you can't get a well-groomed lawn delivered, but you can get a chicken parmesan delivered. A cabana? That's a no. But a banana? That's a yes. A nice tan? Sorry. Nope. But a box fan? Happily, yes. A day of sunshine? No. A box of fine wines? Yes. Uber Eats can definitely get you that. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. Product availability may vary by region. See app for details.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello and welcome to Thursday's episode of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am Craig Fowler, and on this occasion I am joined by Robert Borthwick.
Yes, how's it going? First, you named me first, you forgot the bit.
Delighted. No, I didn't. I just mixed it up. Did you not tell with the inflection of my voice? Or triumphant?
Nope.
Give you a wee... Okay, fair enough. It's probably because I was thrown off as well, because I've got a man who's usually introduced last on a well-known TV show. Critically acclaimed TV show, and that is Sean McGuigan. Hello, Sean.
Hello, he's okay?
I'm frustrated, Sean. I'm frustrated.
That's understandable. I suppose it's quite hard to be too downbeat, bearing in mind what happened last week, but it feels like a missed opportunity, and I suppose we won't know how big a missed opportunity is until, so I think a draw...
Until we finish fifth in a World Cup group.
So I think it draws the 7th of December. So that will give us a rough idea of what group we're finishing fourth in. but you know something, of the second seeds, it used to be that we're probably in a scenario 18 months ago, two, three years ago, where all second seeds would concern us. But now it's maybe just half the second seeds. You think to yourself, right, that might be a bit of a toil. So if we can get lucky with a draw on the 7th, we might still be okay. And for the first time in a while, I'm starting to think maybe we could finish second in a group. But that seems like a strange thing to say based on the last two results, but not necessarily based on the last two performances, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So obviously for those of you who don't know, which would be weird if you're listening to this, we are talking about Scotland's 1-0 defeat in Israel. It means that we finished second in the Nations League. We only had to win one of our last two games or draw either of them. We should definitely have at least got a draw in both games. We didn't. We lost both of them. Czech Republic did what they had to do. They won both their matches. And that's us blowing out a terrific chance. It wouldn't have guaranteed that we would have got a playoff for the World Cup. But the chances are that we would have done, because basically I think in the kind of Euros, I think every team that finished, because it would go to, there was two places up for grabs, so it would be, I think I'm right in saying it would be two group winners. So we'd have to have a case where, like, so you've got four teams in the League A and four teams in League B winning their groups. And we'd have to have, you know, two others basically not qualifying for the World Cup through the World Cup qualification group. And considering the Ligue 1 guys are all the kind of best teams in the world, that's very unlikely. So they would all be through. So we'd just basically have to have at least two more teams in League B qualifying for the World Cup, or at least getting to a playoff. And then we would have got it if we don't finish top two in our group. And we're not expected to finish top two in our group because we're the third seed. And that's another thing as well. We had a chance, had we won both games, to move up to the second seed in our World Cup group. And we've missed that opportunity as well. Now, as you said, Sean, it's hard to be too downbeat because last week was a seminal moment. It was brilliant. It was one of my favourite moments as a football fan. And despite the fact what's happened since then, that can't be taken away. We're still going to the Euros. Well, I've said this a few times before. I need to stop saying that. It definitely can be taken away. COVID's still hanging around. There's good news coming out today. The vaccines may be introduced early next year. That's great. But for now, I'm touching every piece of wood I can find. It should be taken away. So that's done. That's a line drawn under that. We can still be happy with that. We can still celebrate that. But I don't want to make qualifying for an international tournament something that happens once a generation. I want it to happen. I want it to happen like it used to happen, like it used to happen all the time. And I think we had a great chance. We can still do it, of course. We can still have a very good World Cup qualification campaign. We can get a decent draw, do well in the groups, finish first or second, we have to go through playoffs or whatever, get to World Cup, get to two tournaments in a row, and then it gets easier for that point forward to qualify for other tournaments. But we've made it harder on ourselves again. And it's just very frustrating. And anybody who just says, anybody with the attitude of, doesn't really matter that much, you can fuck off. I'm sick of anybody who wants to just act like a loser and like, oh, we should just be happy to be there. Bollocks. I want us to be a respectable international team again. I don't want us to be like, oh, yeah, we're just happy to be here because we never get to be here. Kind of like the small nations you occasionally see qualify for World Cups. And it's just like, oh, pat on the head, patronise them. Yes, well done. You never get to be here. Isn't it great kind of thing? Kind of like listening to Football Weekly last week when they were talking about the Scotland game. The Scottish guy was quite good that was on it, but the rest of them were just like, oh, I was just so happy for Scotland. I was just kind of thinking, fuck off. I didn't want you to be happy for us. I fucking hate you lot. And we only get them to hate us once we become an international fixture once again. So I'm annoyed because we should have won either of those two games. We should have won the Slovakia game because we were the better team. And I think Slovakia were already on their holidays. And we should have won last night because... And this, we'll get on to this to talk in more detail. For some reason, we kind of beat fucking Israel.
I think a lot of times what it comes down to with Scotland is, so it kind of comes down to maths to a certain degree. So see when it comes to an international qualifying group.
When did Craig Anderson turn up?
The thing is, I'm now anticipating that Craig Anderson will message me to say that I'm wrong. But approximately what you need is, right, for any group, when it comes to international qualifying, you need to average 4 points per opponent in your group, right? So if you've got six teams in your group, if you get to 20 points, you'll probably finish second, okay? And we never do that. Now, partly that's because we never, ever take any points for the top seed in the group. But that's fine because you can make those points up elsewhere by taking 6 points off the bottom seed and 6 points off the fifth seed or 6 points off the fourth seed or whatever. But we generally don't do that either. We've done it in 96, done it in 98, and we've only done it since then. We've only done it in 2008, but we also had Italy and France in the group. And this Nations League group was a perfect example of where we generally go wrong. So 12 points for the one us a group, we ended up having 11. But we kind of made things hard for ourselves when we dropped points against Israel at home in the first game, when we drew 1-0, and we were rubbish that night. I mean, really, really poor, and didn't really trouble them at all. And that meant that almost certainly we had to win two away games. And for a team that generally doesn't win away games, that was always going to be difficult. And I suppose the only silver lining is, for years now, we've went to places and we've played teams that aren't really that good, but we have been pummeled by them. They've penned us in. We've ended up losing by like two and three and never really laid a glove on them and never really looked like we were ever going to take anything for that game. So I suppose the only silver lining is on Sunday and last night, like those games, then they follow that trope. Like, see if we'd had a goal scorer in that team, then I think we would have beat Slovakia and we probably would have got a point in Israel. The only thing I would say for last night was, as much as we had more shots in the aim and it kind of felt like we had the upper hand, at no point did it ever really feel like we were going to score. Like, the chances we created were kind of half chances and decent chances. They probably created better chances. Like obviously, like the goal, David Marshall had a good save with his legs at the start of the second half. They had one that was deflected wide right at the start of the second half as well. And like, that was all kind of closer than we managed to kind of cobble together in the entirety of the 90 minutes. But that still feels like a step forward. And now feels like, last week it felt like we'd taken strides, but this week it maybe feels like we've taken a wee, it kind of feels like baby steps rather than a kind of stride that we maybe thought it was.
So Sean, basically what you're saying is we've become better at losing. We've improved upon how we lose games. I mean, that's most certainly baby steps.
It's progress. I mean, if you're going to win a game, you have to be in it to win it. Like, you can't just be getting gumped 3-0. So it's better to lose 1-0 and be, you know, the better team.
I did say it was a silver lining. There's still a big, gigantic, dark cloud in the middle of it. But at least there is a silver lining. I mean, listen, even if you go back a few months, we're wondering, right, what we're going to do at the back. So it turns out that to solve the central defensive problems, we just play fewer central defenders. We need to play a midfielder and a left back. So we didn't really anticipate that. So maybe there is an unusual way that we can fix the forward positions as well. I don't know what that is, but maybe Clark can figure something out.
Just play Declan Gallagher there as well.
Not judging by that header he missed.
Every single corner kick, it was just every single header went 10 yards in the air. It's like, all right, okay, back in position.
So, Rob, what do you think of what myself and Sean have basically said so far about just kind of Scotland in general before we get kind of too much into the minutia of last night's game?
I think I've now set a benchmark of that Serbia game because we did play so well and it was away from home. And that sort of benchmark, not just for the team, but for individuals as well. So Callum McGregor put in his best performance in Serbia in a Scotland jersey, in my opinion. He was back to looking pretty pedestrian last night. He wasn't moving the ball quick enough and we really needed that in the middle of the park for a team that was sitting back. We needed to hit them with a bit of pace. He didn't do it. Andy Robertson probably had one of his better games against Serbia. Again, he was fairly poor last night. He was kind of shown up again by Kieran Tierney, who was bombing forward, getting into the box and trying to start attack. So you kind of looked at a regression of the individuals. Lyndon Dykes wasn't as good. He was poor. Poorest game in a Scotland jersey so far. So in terms of the international break that we've just seen generally, yeah, I mean, there's improvements on what we've seen in Scotland for the last 4 or 5 years. But it's still frustrating to see that in the space of 5-6 days, they can go back to playing how they were before against an opposition that isn't as good as Serbia, I would say. Israel just seems to be a mental block that we have. Obviously, the team has much changed against Slovakia, but they actually performed really quite well. So it's a weird one of mixed emotions and mixed performances for me that is kind of confusing more than anything else, that we can't put a run together, especially when the players are spending more and more time together towards the end of the break.
As much as we absolutely regressed from the performance against Serbia, but it still felt like, which I know it feels weird considering we drew at Hampden, I still feel like we played better against Israel away from home than we did at home.
We definitely did. We were awful in that game at Hampden. And you still have an advantage. Like, home and away, even though there's no crowd, it still comes into it. You're still having to travel all the way to fucking Israel to play in a stadium that you're not used to play on, a pitch that you're not used to, against their opponents who are more familiar with their surroundings. That works both ways. So we had that advantage at Hampden. Didn't look like we did at all. And Israel kind of did to an extent last night. But I do agree with your point that we were much better last night than we were in that game. I was kind of thinking about this earlier. I wonder whether at some point, because in every single Israel game, he played a three-at-the-back system, and Israel played a three-at-the-back system. And I just wonder whether he could have maybe changed it up at some point. Just like, I like the system he's kind of come on. I think it certainly done well in Serbia, done pretty well in Slovakia as well. It looked good towards the end of the Nations League game last month against Slovakia at home in the Czech Republic. But I wonder whether it just doesn't match up well with the Israel side, and whether he should have, and what was Clark's fourth third game against them. And maybe he should have kind of mixed up, especially later on in the game, where like he was making a lot of subs, but the formation stayed the same. It was just Oliver Burke running the ball to play instead of Stephen O'Donnell.
I mean the formation stayed the same, but the formation stayed the same. That the positioning of the players changed quite a lot. McTominay and Tierney ended up being right on the touchline, so they were the outball every time, which meant that Burke and Robertson could push further forward. So it was the same system, but I think it did change tactically when these players came on. It was certainly a lot more attacking. Anyway, I thought Ollie Burke looked great for about 4 minutes.
Yeah, and then he kind of went back to being Burke again. Would you say Sean's a horse?
Arguably the best 4 minutes of his career. I tell you what I would say. See, just overall in terms of the group, I think we probably got what we deserved, because I think in the early part of this group we kind of rode our luck. I thought we maybe just about deserved a draw against Israel in that first game. I thought we were a long way second best against the Czech Republic C team in the away game. I thought we'd done okay against the Czech Republic at home, but still, if you remember, they missed about two or three, not necessarily open goals, but they missed two or three glorious chances for within the 6 yard box. So we rode our luck at times, and probably there was some points picked up in the early part of the group that we maybe didn't quite deserve, and that role was probably reversed in those last two games. So. We didn't deserve to win the group, but it still feels like a missed opportunity, unfortunately.
So yeah, that's,
and because of the way it's all ended, we get to play Israel again. So everyone's a winner. Steve Clark can finally go out there and vanquish his foes. I hate that. It's only
is that how it works? It's not drawn again.
No, I'll definitely. Be
I
drawn
don't
again.
Think so.
No, it's drawn again.
We'll still get Israel.
I don't think we're automatically in a league with Israel just forever, unless we get promoted or relegated.
Fucking, we better not.
I know, we didn't get promoted, and they fucking followed us.
I know, but they unexpectedly got promoted because it went from groups of three to groups of four.
Oh yes,
is that how Northern Ireland managed to get relegated twice in the last two leagues? Aye, then
so finished they bottom. They got relegated twice, but got relegated once.
Yes, aye.
Like Aberdeen. But they first bottom once and didn't get relegated. But that doesn't count, yeah. Apparently. You know, they knew because of the reconstruction on the ground. So they wanted to finish last.
100%.
Like I get can't. Relegated often. That's where the cool kids are.
Exactly. Relegation's fun. You get to win every week the next season. Right, let's get in. So... I don't think. Did anybody have any problems with the team to start with? I certainly didn't. When it was no. The same team as the Serbia game. Yeah, you kind of thought, right, just rewind it back, play the same. Brilliant. Job's a good one. Don't lose a late goal from a corner.
And don't concede first.
Yeah.
Because no. I suppose that was always a concern. As much as we kind of defensively looked decent. We haven't scored a lot of goals recently, and if we were to go a goal down, how are we going to react, and could we possibly overcome it? And last night would suggest that we can't. That was a kind of massive blow. It looks like with that system that we would have to score first, because plan B isn't quite good. I know we're going to come onto it, and I'm skipping ahead, but plan B isn't quite good enough to overcome that.
When was the last time we actually scored two goals in a match? Czech Republic away.
Aye.
Yes.
Aye. Well. Aye. God.
That's against an A team.
Yeah. That's a problem I still have with this kind of Scotland team, and I still thought it was there. I think the only game I've seen recently where it wasn't was the Slovakia away game, where we did look kind of quite cohesive, created chances regularly. But in every other game that we've pretty much had recently, even ones that have been positive, I still don't think there's a lot of. Cohesion is just a word to use again. Up front, the players, I don't ever trust them. Whenever they get the ball in the final third, I don't try. Like a good example last night was Callum McGregor getting the ball down the left wing and getting to the byline, right in behind. Good run, to be fair to him. But then I'm thinking, I actually thought at the time before he made the pass, if he's playing for Celtic, this ball's going straight to a Celtic player and this is a goal. And he played it behind everybody. And I was like, well, of course. Like, I was just expecting that to happen. And it,
yeah, there was as much as
we're looking like better and guys like Christie are playing well and Dykes are playing well, again, not last night, but in like the previous games, there still doesn't seem to be that sort of understanding between our forwards. The play is not often smooth in attack. It still looks a little bit...
We were given a taster. We were given a taster of Ryan Fraser and Lyndon Dykes in the last round of internationals, and that was properly promising because they were finding each other every single time. They knew where each other was, and Fraser playing that sort of second striker role, buzzing about off of Lyndon Dykes, that gave me a lot of hope. But then obviously we've been sans Fraser in this one, and it's just finding... being able to find a formula that works. Christie is, you know, his performance against Serbia and all that kind of stuff, he deserves to be in there. But at the same time, him and Dykes don't necessarily link up like Dykes and Fraser did. And then you've got balls going into the box. Quite often, I noticed it last night, Dykes would make the run to the near post and the ball would end up at the back post. And that happens so often when the ball was actually getting put into the box. And it's just... it's almost like a lack of understanding in there. And I'd like my biggest concern about the Scotland team is the sort of forward part, be that your one striker or the three behind it and all that kind of stuff. There just doesn't seem to be the depth or any much of a solution in there, especially if Dykes goes out and we lose him, because he is one of the biggest positives. But at the same time, there's nothing else behind him that you can trust.
It is fairly possible that Clark... in kind of moulding this team and putting together the system that he thinks suits them the best, it's quite possible that they started for the back, and that's the bit that's been kind of drilled the most, and maybe the forward play's not quite been worked upon, and that's something that will be worked upon more in the future when we have the next internationals in March, and then obviously going into the... I imagine they'll try and organise a few kind of warm-up games for the Euros as well, and that's maybe something that they'll look at a bit more. I'd hope that to be the case, because I don't want to go to the Euros next year and just get scudded every game.
I hadn't realised, but the first six World Cup qualifiers, they play in triple headers, two triple headers. So there's a triple header in March, but then I don't think there's any other competitive games until September. So I presume there's some friendlies before then. But I think we badly missed Fraser. The thing that would concern me about that is Fraser regularly isn't available for Scotland. I'm not saying he calls off frivolously. But
I can say that.
Well, maybe he does.
Not this time, I would say.
No, and I sincerely doubt he'll be pulling out frivolously in the future, bearing in mind we've got a tournament coming up. But he is often not available for Scotland. So if plan A is Dykes and Fraser, then we need another backup plan, and I'm not sure what that is. Christie for me is... so I like Christie, and Christie is obviously a talented player. But last night was kind of how I felt about him quite often. I think he can be quite greedy at times. There was a point in the first half, we ended up getting a free kick out of it. Christie was attacking Dykes in front of him, and Dykes had made a pretty good run. And I don't know how Christie couldn't see him or how he couldn't pick him out. But Christie decided to go his sail, and he got the shot in, and he was kind of chopped down, and it ended up being a free kick that we wasted. But Dykes was the obvious one to play in. And then there was a couple of times where he would get in the final third and it looked like there was options there, and he would just delay it, or he would take that extra man on, or he would run into traffic unnecessarily, and it was just another kind of... it was a frustrating game, and that was quite a frustrating element of it.
I think if you look at the domestic sort of form of Ryan Christie, there was a stage, I don't know if this is still true, but there was a stage where he had taken more shots outside of the box than Dundee United. So it's like, you know, he does have this... he's decent at hitting shots from distance. He's scored a few of them already this season as well. But he does... Not so much greedy. I think it's the speed of getting his head up. Because that run from Dykes in the first half yesterday, Dykes bent his run perfectly. He's screening for it, but Christie's looking at the ball. You can see it on the replay. He's still looking at the ball, and he's obviously not looking at where Dykes is. As soon as he looks up, Dykes is offside, and he has to then continue. So greed is maybe an element of it, but I think it's just the speed of vision with him sometimes when it comes to playing through balls. It just isn't quite there. And as you say, it can be incredibly frustrating to watch. And I think that Celtic fans would probably agree that this season he has been incredibly frustrating to watch because he does that so often.
And I do think it kind of goes back to even the Serbia game. Like, yes, we played very well as a team, but I still kind of thought that... I kind of thought if Christie didn't come up with that moment of magic, so this is the reason for having him in the side, but it kind of goes to saying that he's not the perfect man to start alongside Dykes, is that if he didn't come up with that moment of magic, I don't think Scotland were scoring in that game. And we can't, as a team, you can't really rely upon your kind of, even though he is a very good player, you can't rely on somebody, you know, selling a fake to a defender, turning, firing it in off the post from, you know, 20 yards or whatever. You want to create proper clear-cut chances. And I don't think we necessarily did all that, despite the fact completely dominating the game. And even, you could even maybe say this a lacking, we created a lot of chances, but, you know, maybe we should have created more. Like, it's like, we certainly had enough of the ball, we had enough of territory, we had enough opportunities to do that. And it's, yeah, it's just a bit of concern. So do we just reckon that, Fraser's the answer, but he's maybe not going to be the answer that's available all the time. What's the second answer? What's the backup answer?
Good question, because I don't think it's Lee Griffiths or
Lee Griffiths, as Craig Cairns says in the chat, should now just change his name to a fully fit Lee Griffiths.
Do you know what I'm saying? When Griffiths comes on for Scotland, I always expect something to happen. But that thing that generally happens is he just has attempts at goal, rather than actually scoring. And this kind of goes back to, I can't remember even who was in charge at the time, but you're going back 3 or 4 years maybe. And I think I might have been in Slovakia. We're getting beat 2 or 3-0, maybe 2-0 at a time. And
under Strachan.
And there was under Strachan, you're right. And Lee Griffiths come on, and within 2 minutes, I think, he'd had 2 attempts at goal, or 5 minutes, he'd had 2 attempts at goal and brought a couple of saves at a goalkeeper. And I'm like, right, here we go. It's exactly what Griffiths brings to the team. He's actually going to have an attempt. If he's 25 yards, he'll still want the goalie. And that's still kind of just what he does. He works the goalkeeper, but doesn't he seem to score goals? I mean, he hasn't scored a goal for Scotland for 3 years. He's only scored 4 goals for us. And in general, I don't know how unfit he is. I don't know how much less fit he is than a normal fit Lee Griffiths. But I would say he's now 30, so I suppose... For a striker, I suppose you do start to go in the way, and I don't know. I think Griffiths has a role to play for us, but I'm now starting to get to the stage where I'm less excited when I see him coming on, because I think he's just going to be a pest rather than a goal scorer for us, I suppose, which is a bit sad.
Gone are the days of Jordan Rhodes and Stephen Fletcher. That's the caliber of striker that we need to get back into this Scotland fold. I think plan A is quite clearly going to be Lyndon Dykes, and rightly so. He's earned that. He's earned to be the number nine. I think if you're looking for players that can buzz about often, that's more kind of my concern if Fraser isn't there, who can do that. I think Griffiths came on last night and had to play off of Ollie McBurney, who, by the way, I thought McBurney was actually okay. I think he does obviously get a lot of stick. I think he was an improvement on Dykes because he was actually holding the ball up and bringing other players into it. But, I mean, who else could you say is in the mould of Ryan Fraser? James Forrest? You know, little guy, a bit quick, can score goals. Is he maybe an answer to that question? I don't know if he'll ever play because of the right wing-back position. Sean is shaking his head furiously. And I think that's fair, because James Forrest in a Scotland jersey certainly has flattered to deceive more often than not. But it's looking at the system and who can play the second striker role effectively. It's not going to be Callum Patterson. It's not going to be Ollie McBurney. So it's about finding the player that can just be an effective pest that can also influence the game. So Ryan Fraser is perfect for it, but to be honest, I don't know who could be the other person behind.
Stuart Armstrong deserves more of a chance under Steve Clarke. He doesn't seem to rate him all that highly.
So I think Armstrong is better than Christie. However, over the last 10, 11 games, Christie has either scored or assisted a goal, whereas Armstrong again can be quite quiet, I think, for Scotland. But you see him playing for, because I wonder if maybe, like, I would never watch 90 minutes of a Southampton game, but I would watch Southampton on Match of the Day. and Armstrong would produce something. He'd test a goalie, or he'd score a good goal, or he'd set something up. So you think, Armstrong must be having a good season. But maybe actually the rest of the game, he's not actually doing that much. And when you see him for 90 minutes for Scotland, I'm like, I seen you in match today scoring a good goal last week. Why are you not doing that again tonight? So I don't know. Maybe Armstrong isn't quite as good as I give him credit for, but I would like to think he could be the answer. But I don't know if I've seen enough film in a Scotland jersey to suggest that he might be.
I think we missed Armstrong last night. That sort of player who can do well in the transition and move the ball forward, because we were missing that. We were missing someone who had that, not just the urgency to close down, but also when he gets the ball, he's always on the half turn and he's looking to go forward. And we really missed that, especially with, John McGinn was blowing out of his massive arse towards the end of that game.
And that's a lot of blowing.
That's a lot of blowing, absolutely. But I think that it's a shame because McGinn is that sort of player, but you could tell that he was running on empty towards the end, so it was absolutely right to take him off. But the man who should come on, obviously he wasn't in the squad last night, is Stuart Armstrong, because he's the guy that can effectively, be that link between midfield and attack and get the ball forward. So I think that he does probably deserve a bit more game time in this setup. But I think specifically last night as well, when you're coming up against a stodgy team, he's a good guy to have in there because he can move it forward.
We also missed the ability to attack down both flanks. So even in the game on Sunday, I felt we were getting at them on the right and the left, which has been provided on the left, was being provided by Tierney. But last night, we weren't doing that at all. So O'Donnell was getting forward on the right. I have warmed to O'Donnell the last few games. I don't know if he gives us more than Palmer, albeit at the weekend, Palmer got in some good spaces, but didn't kind of provide the final ball. O'Donnell was probably fine on the right. I like the fact he probably gives everything he has. Robertson might have been one of our deepest sitting players last night. He provided very little going forward on the left, and I know he was up against a decent opponent down their right hand side, but you're now at the stage where you just kind of expect that for Robertson on the left to not really give us any kind of width from an attacking situation, and that's, I'm now starting to think that the question about who would be best playing on the left, Tierney or Robertson, the answer probably is Tierney.
I mean, looking at the evidence of the last couple of games, I would say so. He offers way more. He's got more urgency going forward. He's not afraid to take a man on, whereas Robertson in a Scotland jersey, it's such a stark contrast to what he does for Liverpool. It's so weird. I don't know if he's trying to take on too much responsibility, if he's trying to, be a midfielder at the same time as an attacker, at the same time as a defender, and just trying to be that man on the left. I don't know what it is, but Tierney offers more for me.
Joe's been telling us for 3 or 4 years, so fair enough, Joe was right.
Yeah.
Hey, whoa, whoa,
as
whoa,
ever.
Whoa. Is the captain ever going to be dropped? That's the kind of thing.
No.
It's just no.
He won't. I mean, there was a spell when Scott.
That's why don't give the captain a jersey. Don't give the captain a jersey to somebody. I'm not sure I ever liked Robertson getting the jersey, the armband anyway. It was kind of ceremonial in terms of, like, let's draw a line under this kind of period. This is the new Scotland. This is our young kind of captain who's playing for Liverpool, blah, blah, blah. Not entirely certainly suited to being a captain. And when you have another great player in his position, that's kind of, that should have been a warning sign already. It's like, well, are you prepared to drop your captain? You probably shouldn't give him the armband. You should give him the armband to somebody who's not going to drop the team. Although, to be fair, with Scotland, I don't know who that would be. They're all droppable.
I actually wondered if that was one of the reasons that they gave him it. So they maybe felt there was less chance of him dropping out if he was literally the captain of the team.
All right, you mean him dropping out of the international? Maybe. Brian Jack played well last night for some positives. He continues to look pretty good in a Scotland jersey.
Ryan Jack's kind of renaissance in the Scotland team. I think he's very, very rarely done anything wrong, and I think he might have been one of our better players last night, if not the best. I do think at the goal, I thought the goal was weird. The goal started in there. I think the goal started in their 6-yard box. Lyndon Dykes kind of tried to square the ball across goal with the outside of his foot. That was cut out. Then I think it was, it might have been Tierney that they missed out on the header in the middle of the park, which might have been a soft free kick. And then for that point, we looked like we were in trouble. But nobody really reacted as if they felt we were in trouble. Like Jack, I'm not saying Jack was necessarily at fault, but he, like Israel were attacking us at speed and he just kind of jogged along alongside. Like he never ever got back in a position where he was going to be able to help out McTominay, who was then exposed. And I think McTominay at that point, I can see why Craig Anderson and was it Ewan Booth Robertson had their spat about whether or not McTominay could play centre half. And I suppose I can see why they both said what they said, because I think the majority of the time McTominay probably can play centre half reasonably well, but then so could Lyndon Dykes probably. But with both individuals, they will eventually get exposed at the fact that that's nowhere to play. And that was probably a good example of it last night. But I thought Jack could have gotten a bit quicker. But yes, other than that, I thought in general he had a very good game. He keeps things simple. He tidies up. He protects the back four. He kind of snuffs a lot of attacks out, and I really like him.
His wee through ball for Stephen O'Donnell in the first half as well, the first time with the outside of the foot, was absolutely brilliant. So he can offer that side of it as well. I really like Ryan Jack. I like him in that Rangers team. I like him in the Scotland team. He quietly goes about his business and is effective at doing so. I think, you know, he's not undroppable, but at this stage, I don't see anyone who could come in and do a better job than what he's doing just now. Kind of on the McTominay point, quickly, I don't want to drive a wedge between Craig Anderson and Ewan Booth-Robertson here, but I think the benefits of playing McTominay at centre-half, whereby he can start attacks, bring the ball out of defence, and allow O'Donnell to push forward, up until last night, probably outweighed the negatives, but now that's two goals in two games that you could say that he's been completely exposed for. So it's like, maybe it's better to not lose goals than to have a guy who can bring the ball out of defence and be effective in that way. So I'm on the fence with it.
In fairness to the McTominay at centre half brigade, shall we say, I'm in neither camp. I'm kind of indifferent. I see both sides. I'm Switzerland in this war. The goal against Serbia is from a set piece. If he's in the team, he's going to be marking one of their taller players anyway, because he's a tall player. So that, I don't think that necessarily matters where he's playing at centre half or in midfield. And you think if he's not playing at centre half, you think he might play in midfield because he's an English Premier League player, even though he might be better with Jack and McGregor in there, or Jack and not McGregor in there. I'm going back to McGregor. I bagged him up on the telly. That's the thing that loads of people watch. So everybody's going to say, yeah, Fowler likes McGregor at Scotland level. But if the real OGs, people who listen to the show, will know that that was an outlier, and he's generally pish, and he was again last night.
Well, I mean, you say the word outlier. His performance in Serbia was an outlier for Scotland. Well, he's now got 28 caps, and he's had one memorable performance in those 28 games.
He's going to end up with 50 caps, and the vast majority of them are going to be shit.
And he's going to get a gold medal for it. He's going to get a gold medal, or whatever they get for the 50 appearances. Or I don't know if that's...
Place in the Hall of Fame. You get an automatic place in the Hall of Fame.
Place in the Hall of... Imagine that, Callum McGregor, a place in the Hall of Fame, 50 games for Scotland, 49 of them fucking anonymous.
See when he took the armband off McGinn a few weeks ago, my jaw hit the floor so fucking hard the neighbours complained, honestly. I was like, are you kidding? That guy. And he's got stupid hair, anyway.
Is there any other players to praise, or will we go on to the next on our memorable list of Scotland games?
Was anybody else praiseworthy?
David Marshall, again, had a decent game. Made a couple of good saves. Good for him.
Oh, he was fine.
Let's move on.
The 4 minutes of Ollie Burke needs mentioned again, just very quickly. No, it doesn't. He's a horse.
Right, so this is number 26, I think, in our top 50 list of the most memorable Scotland games of all time.
Really drawing the short straw here.
And I remember it so well.
God remembers it, to be fair.
Right, so who voted for it? How can you have a memorable Scotland game list and nobody remembers it? Unless ghosts have been voting.
Well, it was a vote, so you watch a lot of horror films, Sean. Is there any ghosts in the rig elections?
Honestly, democracy is broken.
So this comes from the 30th of November, 1872. There was no number one in the charts, obviously. I had a look at Wikipedia. This is called Music in 1872. There was four songs that said pop culture or pop songs. And I Googled all four of them to see if there was any kind of trace of any of them. Now, I couldn't establish a clear link for this, but there is a song called You'll Never Miss the Water Till the Well Runs Dry by Harry Lynn and Roland Howard, which there are songs called that. So they might be kind of covers from that previous song that originated in 1872. But like I say, I couldn't find a clear link, so it might just be songs with the same name.
So do you think songs from 1872 have been getting cover versions?
Well, they might be passed down and stuff. I don't know how it worked back then.
No, not just the same name, maybe?
Probably just the same name. It's quite a long name that would be the same.
I mean, this game probably even predates a number of hymns. It's that fucking long ago.
It does predate film by 23 years.
Only 23?
So there was no number one at the US and UK box office.
Hence the fact the only thing I could find from the game was seven drawings.
No, actually, number one at the UK and US box office was just hand puppets. Right, of course, this is the first. This is why it's in the list, even though in terms of quote unquote memorable. But we wanted people to pick games that the kind of deserve to be celebrated. And this is the first ever international football match ever between any country, not just Scotland, any country.
Well, see, that I found that quite interesting. So I don't know if I already knew this, but I started reading about it again today. They'd already played each other about five times. This was just the first official one. So the other games that they played each other, it was, I think, either all of them or the majority of them were played in England, and it was from kind of Anglo-Scots. So it was Scottish players that were either in or around the London area, and they decided that wasn't representative enough. Although they did say that the invitation was to all Scottish players, and they say the problem was with the Scottish players that were up north, not kind of answering the call to represent a nation, but I think the theory was it wasn't representative enough. But then this official game only had players from Queen's Park. So how representative is that?
It was
the first official international.
There was two other players named in the squad who did not play for Queen's Park, but they were injured and weren't able to play. That's obviously, as we all know, Arthur Kinnaird of the Wanderers and Henry Rennie Taylor of the Royal Engineers, but we all knew that anyway.
A very good season.
The Wanderers were unstoppable that year. It was quite something. Obviously England had a plethora of different teams. I believe it was nine different teams that they could pick their players from. So, yeah, I can just keep reading the Wikipedia page if you want.
I was kind of reading between the lines from because Charles Alcock, he was the FA secretary and England captain, and he was the one that was kind of like in charge of organising this. And he'd organised the previous matches. He'd kind of thrown down the challenge, put ads in papers asking for Scottish players to form a team and then to come down and play England, and then it mainly became Scots based in London. And he was, it seemed like he was a bit, reading between the lines, it seemed like he was a bit annoyed about it, the fact that like Scotland had basically said, well, because Scotland didn't win any of those games. It's also Scotland, well, that didn't count. They're not our best players. And he's like, well, for fuck's sake then, get a proper team together, we'll get he's a game.
I think the thing that most amazed me was how could it possibly finish 0-0 when Scotland played a 2-2-6 and England played a 1-1-8? Because what that suggests to me is that nobody from 1872 would be able to fix our current up front issues if there's six of them that can't manage a goal.
What a defence, though, Sean! What a defence! Keep a clean sheet against
it's all
eight
because
forwards.
It's all because Scotland's number 11, David Wotherspoon, had one of his off days. He wasn't. We've seen that from him over the years. He underperforms sometimes.
Yeah, that was quite funny. Just reading that at the end of the team. So the team was Robert Gardner and goals. The fullbacks of William Kerr, Kerr spelt with only one R, Joseph Taylor. The halfbacks were James J. Johnson and James Smith. And the forward line was Robert Smith, Robert Leckie, Alex Rind, Billy McKinnon, Jerry Weir, and current St. Johnston midfielder David Wotherspoon.
It was the Wotherspoon family that we have to thank for the having a lion rampant as a badge. He asked his wife to sew 11 lions onto the shirts, although they were white rather than the current colour. So there you go. Thank you, Wotherspoons.
Thank you, Mrs. Wotherspoon.
Very good.
And David for the suggestion. She provided the seamstress skills. He provided the idea. A real team.
I like this sentence. The Scots had a goal disallowed in the first half after the umpires decided that the ball had cleared the tape that was used to represent the crossbar.
It was under the tape.
Aye.
Everybody could see it.
Aye. So this was a question that, fuck it, tape. I don't understand.
There was no.
That was.
There wasn't any cross. I don't know when crossbars were introduced, but they never had any crossbars in 1872. So they just had kind of two poles and some tape.
I mean, had metal even been invented in 1872? I have no idea.
Aye. It was woodwork, Sean. Rob. That's why we still call it woodwork now, even though it's not wood anymore.
Ah, oh, there you go.
I like the fact that even back then, the match report said that every English player had a 2-stone advantage over their Scottish counterpart. So even that isn't a modern thing, that the English players are like just bigger and heavier than us.
Wonder what they were doing back then
instead of 2 stone.
Wonder what they were doing back then instead of doping.
Just taking an absolute shit ton of medicinal cocaine. That's all it is.
That makes you skinnier, though.
Dah.
It's a good reason. Like 4,000 fans were there. It was at the Oval Cricket Ground in Hamilton. Was it something like that? I should have written that down.
Yes, it was the cricket ground in at Hamilton Crescent.
Hamilton Crescent, yes. That now sells Christmas trees.
Yes. I went up there and had a bevy during the summer because none of the pubs were open. It was very nice. Yeah.
4,000 fans watched the match, and despite finishing a 0-0 draw, they roared their appreciation at the end. They were thoroughly entertained by what they saw.
Now there is a bit of a discussion about whether or not there was 4,000 there, because they weren't entirely sure if it could hold 4,000, and the gate money would suggest that there wasn't 4,000 there. The gate money would suggest that there was about 2,000 to 2,500 there, although officially it is 4,000. However, women were given free admission, so maybe there was 2,000 women there as well that didn't have.
This sounds an awful lot how Celtic tally up their attendances every week by saying, "Oh, there's 60,000 here, and the fucking top tier's empty." It sounds like, you know, a game as old as time, bringing up attendances there. That's good.
They're probably even doing that this season. I want to talk about Robert Gardner a bit, because I had these notes. Apologies to anybody listening if I've read all these notes already, because I think one of the first games we've done of this was a match kind of for similar times, and I had a lot of notes left over, but I purposely left some for when we got to this game, the first ever international. But that was also so long ago that I've completely forgotten what I read out and what I didn't. But I didn't think I talked about Robert Gardner, who was the captain of the team. So Scotland's first ever captain. He kept goal, kept a clean sheet in the first half. Doesn't count to keep a clean sheet for the entire game because he swapped with Robert Smith at half-time and went outfield. But there was a quote read from, "Gardner was like a manager, administrator, captain rolled into one, having helped organise that first international, pick the Scotland team and organise the players into positions. With no manager on the sidelines, he was also the man deciding during games on changes of positions and tactics, and often, including in that first international, that meant him coming out of goal to play outfield. He was so versatile that I have seen him at work in all positions of the field, goalkeeper, back, half-back and even forward. But as a goalkeeper, that was where he excelled. when I remember the brilliant men who have since stood between the posts, none ever used their hands and weight to greater advantage than Gardner. Now, I didn't write down who that quote was from, so.
He also is.
What did you say?
It was from.
Who's his dad?
There is also apparently a cartoon depiction of him, which brings out his best qualities. So he had a big, massive fucking beard, and apparently, during boring times of games, he would just smoke his pipe while standing in between the sticks as well. So I've got a lot of time for Bobby Gardner. He seems like a good egg, very well educated as well. Apparently,
he also served as a referee in the first ever international between Scotland and Wales.
He sadly died while working on the fourth bridge.
I died for TB. So did David Wotherspoon, not the company.
He died from tuberculosis on the fourth bridge.
I'm sure it was he felt ill and went him.
That read that he died on the fourth bridge. He definitely should have phoned in sick that day.
Robert, can you lift that girder? Ah, my lungs.
Maybe I mixed up. Maybe it wasn't Robert Gardner. I thought he died on the fourth bridge.
I'm just Googling this now just to make sure.
The other thing I thought was quite funny was the English players wore caps for the game, but the description of the Scottish players is that they wore cowls. So what I couldn't get my head around was a cowl is the hooded part of what Batman wears. So that made it sound like a kind of Fathers for Justice convention. But judging by the drawings, that it was like wee caps that made the Scottish players look like gnomes.
Aye, yeah, that's. I mean, from the cartoons that I've studied, it certainly looked that way.
On FIFA's page, it says that he died from tuberculosis.
Oh, I just went to his Wikipedia page.
No, Sean, I'm reading his Wikipedia page to now. It says that he found work on the fourth bridge project at South Queensferry, but he died in South Queensferry at the age of 40, I think. It's to be fair, it is a very weirdly worded sentence.
Well, who knows? It was one or the other, wasn't it? The fourth bridge.
We pretty sure of a guy who was so good with his hands fell off the fourth road bridge, the fourth rail bridge, and died.
What a shame. Right.
I'm just having a look through. How else did everyone die? Let's have a look.
I had a look. I did have a look to see how many of the team died because of TB, because I know it was a bit more kind of prevalent back then. So Wotherspoon died of TB. Who else was in line? Jerry Weir. He was another one of those diseases that was quite. That's now kind of been eradicated.
Go.
Leprosy. He unfortunately died of smallpox.
I think we should wrap this up then.
No, I'm having fun looking at how these guys died.
I'm out of facts about this game that may or may not be true anyway.
Christ, a lot of them died off of young, eh?
Well, you know.
It was 1872.
It's pish to love back then.
That is true.
If you had TB, that was you fucked, basically. Because they'll just call it the lung. You've got the lung. That's you. It's waste away. Shite.
Anyway, on that note.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode. We're away to record a Patreon now, where we're going to look back at the current Scotland squad and which of those players were most likely to die from TB. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.